right? We got a lot of different things coming at you today, okay? And I'm just sensing a little bit of a lull right now. That. You don't got time for that, right? Let's go. Crank it. Crank it. Let it cross. Woo!
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert and Derek Johnson on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
Did you see Mario Chalmers took to Twitter today to say that he had a dream last night that he was the head coach at KU?
Whoa.
Quote, had a dream that I was the head coach at KU, random dream, crazy if that dream became true years down the line. That's almost like foreshadowing right there. Him saying, wouldn't it just be crazy if that dream came true, i.e. it's going to come true. I've went to the future. I've seen the future, and it results in me becoming the head coach. He is the second Kansas point guard in 2021 to at least make mention of the idea of becoming KU's next head coach. Early January, January 5th, Frank Mason tweeted that he wants to be KU's coach someday. He said, somebody call Bill Self, let him know I want to be the next Kansas head coach. He said his dream was to win a national championship and he could make that dream become reality, not as a player, but as a coach. He even went so far as to say BICM instead of BIFM. Mm. Bitch, I'm Frank Mason. Bitch, I'm Coach Mason. Mm-hmm. He said his son, Amari, could play point guard too.
So it's a package deal.
Yeah, but honestly.
So who has the edge?
Between Mario and Frank?
Yeah. I mean, Mario would have more years under his belt. But Frank, you're getting the point guard with the coach.
Let's just go through everything that would entail becoming the coach. Let's go first with recruiting. I feel like Mario Chalmers is going to be a better recruiter than Frank Mason. I just feel like he has a more affable personality. He's more outgoing. You think about going across the country, going into these recruits' living rooms, you know, wowing the mom, impressing the dad with a firm handshake, all that sort of stuff. Frank's more quiet. He's more reserved. I'm not saying he couldn't get better at that, but I feel like I give the slight nod to Mario in that regard.
I think that it might help for Mario that he hit the big shot to where, you know, like, it's not that by winning player of the year, you're going to be forgotten, but in 15 years to a random high school kid in Minnesota or Dallas or something, they're not going to remember Frank Mason like KU fans are, you know? Mario Chalmers will probably have a bigger national legacy. So maybe from recruiting, you're right that he would do better there as well. And you'd have the pipeline to Alaska.
I'm not so much concerned with the pipeline to Alaska personally. I mean, if I gave you Mario Chalmers and Carlos Boozer, name one other basketball player from Alaska.
Trajan Langdon.
Wow. That's pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. Didn't think you'd get the third one because I'm pretty sure there's only three. I don't think there's a fourth.
So you're not into the Alaskan pipeline.
Not that I'm not into it. I just it's not a deal maker for me. What about coaching? See, here's the problem with both of them is that I think they're both too good. They're both too good to be a successful head coach. Are you a believer in the idea that it's tough for really talented players to become good coaches? I think it's tough for them to relate. Now, maybe I guess if you're, you know, coaching other really good players, which theoretically you would be at Kansas, like who's the best player, guy who had such an incredible playing career and then went on to also become a really successful coach at the college level?
At the college level, that's tough. I mean, like,
because most of the good coaches, played.
Like Patrick Ewing, that has not gone well.
Yeah, they played, but they weren't uber successful. Mm-hmm. Juwan Howard's doing it right now at Michigan.
Yeah, that has to be the best case scenario. But the thing is with Juwan Howard, like, and I guess Patrick Ewing did this too. He was like an assistant coach in the NBA for a while. It's not like Juwan Howard just went straight from playing to being the head coach at Michigan. He was a long-time assistant. I remember he was like a guy who was in the running for a couple head coaching jobs in the NBA. So he had kind of a good starting off point. Now, Patrick Ewing did the same, and that hasn't worked out.
Here's the thing. I think the parallel there is probably not as much as we want to make it out to be, because Patrick Ewing was an assistant coach for 15 years, dude. So is it just that he didn't have enough? He needed a few more years? Or is it that he's probably just not as good of a coach as Juwan Howard? Maybe situation has something to do with it. I'm not denying that. But Juwan Howard was an assistant coach for like 5 years in Miami. Maybe it's just that he was meant to be a coach, and maybe Patrick Ewing wasn't. Patrick Ewing was also perennial all-star in the NBA. He was best player in the country when he was in college basketball. Juwan Howard was really good. Juwan Howard is not going to be thought of as an iconic professional basketball player. He'll be thought of as a member of the Fab Five. Like, we know him more for being a part of the Fab Five than we would if he were just a guy who went to another school and were a good basketball player and then had a journeyman career in the league.
Right, which is what he was a guy who was like a top five pick in the draft. He was really good in college, but you're right. It's not like he was a transcendent guy who we look back on and go, oh.
Ewing was, though.
Right.
Ewing's a top 100 player of all time.
Yeah. I mean, he might be. I mean, he's in. There's so many good centers.
Okay,
in college
basketball
history.
So now I can go back and reverse course.
Mm-hmm.
Juwan Howard was a top five pick. Mario Chalmers, Frank Mason, they weren't top five picks.
No.
Juwan Howard, journeyman. Frank Mason, not even making it in the league. But Frank Mason, unanimous National Player of the Year. Mario Chalmers hits iconic shot to win or to send national championship game to overtime, where KU went on to win.
But Steve Kerr, former kind of journeyman point guard, good in college, hit a big shot in the NBA. You know, in the NBA Finals with the Bulls, a couple of them, actually.
I'm aware of his career.
Similar to Mario Chalmers. And Steve Kerr has had quite some success.
If Bill Self, whose contract expires after next season, that's a different conversation for a different day, by the way. I keep bringing it up. People keep telling me, no, this makes sense. Maybe it does. I see both sides of it. It's just odd. It's unprecedented for a guy like him to not have a contract going into the last year of his contract. Let's say, for whatever reason, Bill Self retires, doesn't get extended, NCAA brings the hammer down, whatever, that Bill Self is not the coach beyond 2022. And Jeff Long or whoever is the athletic director at that time says, I'm hiring a former player. I need a Kansas man. I need a Kansas man. I love that. Like when they hired Michigan or then they hired Juwan Howard. We need a Michigan man. Why? I've never understood like the idea. Like, we need a Michigan man. We need a Kansas man. But if they said that, we need a Kansas man, who would the Kansas man be? Who would be the top candidate? Former players.
Okay, so Danny Manning and Jerrod Hass are your...
Jared.
Whatever. Spelled with an O.
It's still pronounced...
You want it to be Jared spelled with an E.
Have you never heard somebody say Jerrod Hass's name before?
Spell it right, then.
You look at Jerrod Hass and say, that guy's name is Jerrod.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, and then Daniel Manning would be the other one.
Right.
Or Dan, depending.
I like Dan Manning. I disagree.
I just mean they're the guys who have, like, the actual coaching experience right now. But I don't think either one. I mean, Hass hasn't made an NCAA tournament, I believe, with Stanford. Maybe they will this year, but it looks like they're on the wrong end of the bubble. Manning made the one first four and obviously was let go with Wake Forest. So, if you hired one of them, I don't think that would go over too well.
No, there's no chance.
You know, that brings up a good point, though. Like, would you want that to happen? Because I heard this said when Danny Manning was, like, doing well at Tulsa before things kind of went south at Wake Forest, this idea that do you really want a former legend as a player to coach your team? Because if it does go south, you kind of trample their legacy.
But you, Juwan Howard went to a Final Four with Michigan. You're never going to take that away from him. You're just going to say, you know what? He just wasn't a great coach. Like, if Danny Manning came to Kansas and didn't work out, we'd just say, okay, wasn't a great coach, still won a national championship. Like, he's still one of the top two players to ever play for KU. And the only reason I say top two is because a guy named Wilt Chamberlain went to KU. But you're right. It's a risk. It's a risk for the player, for a fan. Like, I don't care if my fandom is altered. I want the best coaching candidate. I got a dark horse for you. A guy with head coaching experience, a former Jayhawk, not a Jayhawk for life because he left early, David Padgett. David Padgett took over for Louisville in the wake of that scandal after the departure of Rick Pitino. Actually had a pretty decent run there. 22-14, made it to the NIT quarterfinals. Well, I mean, dude, he was interim coach. Like, he took over wake of a scandal. Like, that was a lot to handle for a guy who was in his early 30s at the time. What is a little concerning is I don't know what he's done since then. Oh, no.
Isn't he like a middle school coach or something?
No. He is a financial advisor for the Derby City Group Wealth Management. But he's just looking for that next opportunity. Imagine coaching for 1 year, having success, like winning 20-plus games in your first year. Like, that's pretty hard to do. Like, there's a lot of coaches who don't ever do that, you know? And then the school saying, we're not going to hire you full-time. And then him just saying, okay, well, I quit coaching forever. Do you think that David Padgett was really married to the idea of being a college basketball coach if he won 22 games and was like, I'm done?
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it.
So did he get – do you think they offered him the job and he was just like, nah, I'm into finances? It's just so weird to me. What's the youngest coach you could hire? They just Denver just fired – Denver University just fired Chauncey Billups' little brother. I think he was like 34. Padgett, when he was coaching Louisville, was 31, 32. So – Mario would be on the young end. Frank needs to. Ooh, Mitch Lightfoot. Just let him stay for another 5 years, and then when he's done, he can just be the coach.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, he's just basically getting an internship.
What if they announced during his super senior year next season that Mitch Lightfoot is the coach in waiting, like they did with Jimbo Fisher at Texas? He's the coach in waiting while he's playing.
I don't know. Yeah.
Isn't he the perfect level of talent to be a head coach, though? Had to really grind it out. I don't know if that's necessarily true. Like, I'm not trying to slight the guy, but it's not like we're talking about Mitch Lightfoot as a senior saying, can you believe how far he's come? It's like, I can believe it.
No, you know who actually is probably the front runner that we just completely forgot? Jock Vaughn. I mean, he is an NBA assistant. He was the interim head coach of the Nets at the end of last year. Cerebral former player. Maybe he's more tied into the NBA game and he wouldn't want to leave for college because you have to deal with recruiting and a bunch of teenagers and stuff. But, like, to me, that seems like the obvious choice if you had to pick a player right now.
That's a good point. What's he doing now?
I thought he was an assistant still with the Nets. I thought he got retained on the staff when Steve Nash came in.
I know he married his college girlfriend.
Does that matter?
Yeah, because she would, you know, if you married some girl that you met in Brooklyn, she's not going to want to move back to Lawrence.
But did she go to KU? Or
it's his college girlfriend.
It could have been a long distance thing.
That's true. I just assume if it's your college girlfriend, if it was your high school girlfriend, you'd call her, she'd be known as your high school girlfriend, not your college
girlfriend. That's a good
point. And, you know, he was in college in the late 90s. It wasn't as easy to meet somebody at a different school, even though I guess you were an All-American basketball player, so you do travel quite a bit, and yeah, you're on TV and things like that. Let's just assume that this is a Kansas girl, and she says, Jock, I've always wanted to move back to Lawrence. Point guard, you're right. Cerebral, likes poetry. That's a plus for me, at least.
Do you think he'd read poetry as, like, motivation before a game?
I say bring them all back. Let's just bring back, just take the five best point guards in KU history, at least the ones who are alive and the ones who are interested in coaching, and put them all on the staff together. Let Jacques build a staff with Mario and Frank Mason, and if Devontae wants to cut his career short to get his coaching head started, that's fine as well. And, yeah, Mitch Lightfoot, we'll make you a director of player development. There you go. Bill Self's still the current head coach. He spoke to the media earlier. We'll let you hear from him coming up in a bit. We got Jesse Newell joining the show coming up later on this hour. This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk.
You already know that if you need a car wash, you need to go to Tommy's Express Car Wash. They've got all the tools and expertise to keep your car clean, both inside and on the outside. You want it clean inside because if anybody gets in your car, they're not going to want it look like a pigsty. Plus, you're going to want it clean of all those germs. You want it clean on the outside because if you're going to be pulling up in somebody's neighborhood, maybe going to see a friend, they're going to see the outside of your car and go, wow. This guy, he knows what he's doing with his car washes. That's because Tommy's Express Car Wash is going to take care of you. Their wash packages let you pay for the services you want, including Tommy Guard and body wax. That's right. Have it looking real spiffy. Wheel cleaning and tire gloss. Underbody flush and spot-free rinse and vacuums as well. If you're like me, you have a dog. I have a golden retriever. She sheds so much. So I need the vacuums at Tommy's Express Car Wash, and boy, do they have them. They do them right. That's wash, rinse, repeat with Tommy's Express Car Wash. And don't forget to download the Tommy Club app today and enjoy endless washing for one low price. That's at Tommy's Express Car Wash.
I don't know if everybody needs to eat crow. I know I need to eat crow based off what I was saying about David McCormick back in December and January, and really even at the beginning of last month. So I'll eat crow. I know some people were a little bit more optimistic or glass half full about his chances of turning it around. So even if you don't have to eat crow, I think you still have to be at a point where you acknowledge the improbability of the fact that we're sitting here at or near the end of conference play. And David McCormick, at least in my eyes, looks like he's going to make first team all conference. Jesse Newell, Kansas City star, joins us now on the show. Jesse, I don't know. Like, I'm not going to make you admit that you were wrong because I don't remember specifically what you were saying at the time when we had these conversations. But how surprised would you be if we took a time machine, went back a month and a half ago, and I told you, yeah, David McCormick might end up on first team all Big 12?
Yeah, no, I don't know if you're serving it warm or cold or lukewarm or out of the microwave, but yeah, I need my serving because if you go back to the archives, you will hear me talk about Dave McCormick and five guard lineups and how Bill Self needed to transition away from McCormick. And hey, it doesn't mean he can't play, but he just is basically bad on both ends of the court. And listen, it's a compliment to both of those men, not only Bill Self for sticking with David McCormick, but also David McCormick for coming out of the slump. Now, the only thing I will say, just as a side note here, because I am eating the crow, whether, you know, fork, spoon, whatever, however it's served to me. Dave McCormick was basically unplayable for the first five or six games. I mean, I will say that, like, whatever numbers you want to look at, whatever you film you want to look at, I mean, ball screen defense, all those sorts of things, it was ugly. And I remember early in the season, there was a point he was making 38% of his twos as a big man at Kansas. And that's basically unprecedented in, you know, the Bill Self era. You know, big men do not make 38% of their twos because, heck, Bill Self frees you up to get you 30%, basically. So you basically have to miss almost every other one. But yeah, they both deserve credit. Absolutely. And there's absolutely a case to be made if you just, especially if you just look at conference numbers, Dave McCormick should be an all Big 12 first teamer. You know, if not, definitely a second teamer, but his numbers across the board are better. His just turnover rate is way down. He's become a better passer. He's gotten to the free throw line. Obviously, he makes his free throws, but the biggest improvement is just both on the offensive and defensive end. You know, he makes his twos now. I talked about him being at 38% early in the year. Right now, he's at 50% for the season, not counting the Washburn game, and 53% in Big 12 play. I mean, that's a huge, huge, huge improvement. So just kind of getting his feet under him and being more confident in there. And then defensively, you know, Bill Self helped him out. They found a way to play ball screen defense with him in there where he doesn't get exposed as much on the perimeter and is able to recover back to his man and sort of help his teammates out. So, again, the kudos go both ways there. But, no, I was definitely one slamming early in the year saying that KU needed to move away from Dave McCormick and move to more five-guard lineups, which is where they were more successful then. And I definitely stand by that through the first few games, but Bill Self saw a path forward and had faith in Dave McCormick. So both of those guys deserve credit for seeing this thing through and obviously having a point here late in the season where he appears to be, if not KU's best player, at least maybe in the top two.
And the numbers over the month of February would indicate that this is one of the elite defenses or has been one of the elite defenses in college basketball. How directly tied to this new defensive identity is the improvements that you were just talking about with Dave on defense?
Yeah, I think it's big. And Bill Self has said this in the last few months or few weeks of press conferences too, where they made this switch and for a while, it requires communication. It requires guys on the backside knowing their roles. It requires recovery. It requires, guys being what, everybody says is connected. And so, when you first do it, it's going to be difficult to be connected on the first game you play, but you get more comfort, you continue to do it, and now it's a little bit more seamless. Guys know their roles, guys know what they're supposed to do, so it's looking better and better and better as the season goes along. You also know me, Nick. I have to be the guy that just keeps bringing this up, but it's because it's true. This has been a really weird KU season when it comes to defense and opponents' three-point shooting. And it's not a coincidence here that when KU was good early in the season and then bad in the middle of the season and then good late in the season, you can basically draw a direct line between the dots of how opponents have shot from three against Kansas. And some of that is in Kansas's control. But again, based on history, not a lot of it is. And so if you want to break it down, like I've done earlier, November, December, there were 8 games. Team shot 28% from three against Kansas. KU was pretty good in those months. The next 8 games, KU played in January. Team shot 43% against KU or 42% against KU from three-point range. Those games didn't look as good. KU went in as a little bit of a slump. And then, at that point, a lot of people tell me, hey, it's the three-point defense that's bad. KU, can't really recover from this. The next 9 games, opponent shot 26% from three against Kansas. So once again, we're talking about how good the defense is and how KU can be pretty good. So there's some happy medium in between there that is probably how the rest of the season will turn out. But if you're not making threes against Kansas, it's really tough to score against them right now. So that's a credit to KU. It's a credit to those guys buying into Bill Self's system. It also doesn't mean that in a one-game sample, it all could go wrong again, and KU looks like January KU. But for right now, KU's on a nice little roll here, and the defense is mostly to thank for that.
No, but let's explore that a little bit more, because I'm looking at the numbers. You gave me the February numbers. That includes the game against West Virginia, who went nuclear from deep against Kansas. They went 11 for 21 from three. That's 52% against KU, yet those numbers are still impressive, as you laid out. If I just look at the last 7 games, though, since West Virginia, you're talking about teams shooting 23% from three. That's one of the best marks in the country. So as you just sort of hinted at there at the end of your answer, just as we said, the great shooting numbers that we saw from KU opponents in December and January wasn't sustainable. How sustainable do you think what we've seen in the month of February is?
Well, I mean, it's however you want to take it. So, yeah, if you want to go since February 8th, which is, I guess, the KU's next game after the West Virginia game, teams are shooting 23% from three-point range against Kansas. The only team in the Power 5 that is doing better than that, quote, better than that, is Florida at 22%. The other teams above them, SMU, East Carolina, VMI. So KU, after being basically the unluckiest three-point defensive team in the nation through January, immediately came back and became the luckiest team in the nation. So, again, there's a happy medium there. And some of this is that these threes are a little bit more contested because KU is forcing teams into taking, shots off the dribble, late in the shot clock, guarded, all those sorts of things. But overwhelmingly, this is the same argument I made in January when teams were shooting like Steph Curry against Kansas. It's the same argument I make now, which is, are teams going to make 23% of their threes moving forward against Kansas? No, that's not going to happen. So KU is somewhere in the middle there. And, even the Baylor game, one of my favorite Twitter follows right now is Shot Quality, which it's a guy out there who's in college, does this amazing work, kind of bases how teams perform based off of every shot they've taken, whether it's guarded, whether it's not, who's taking them, all those sorts of things. And you look at the Baylor game, and his numbers actually said that if it was a normal shooting game for both teams, that Baylor wins that game actually most of the time. So you look at the numbers again, Baylor's shooting 43% from three on the season, and they shoot 6 of 26 against Kansas, which by my count included 4 air balls, you know? So it was just one of those nights for Baylor. I know KU didn't make shots either, but you know, that's if Baylor makes 3 more threes or 4 more threes, which is what you might expect on a normal night from Baylor, then an 11 or a 13 point win all of a sudden doesn't look as nice. So again, KU deserves credit. Marcus Garrett played great defense. KU had a great senior night performance, and Baylor obviously didn't look like themselves in that game. But I'm sort of preaching the same message that was out there in January in the opposite direction in February, which is like, hey, listen, I promise you, KU's defense is better than this. It's going to turn around. And it did. But now it's swung so far to the other side. It's like, hey, KU's defense is pretty good. But, you know, it sort of could be impacted in a one-game sample by that number coming right back and kind of regressing to the mean. So we'll see what happens. Again, for Kansas, you have to be encouraged with what's happened lately. And like I said, if teams aren't making threes against Kansas, they're very, very difficult to score against. But it's, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. So all those things that looked really bad for Kansas and seemed like they might turn around in January now are all turning up aces for Kansas when you think, okay, March could be a little different if a few more of those shots go in.
What's good for the goose is good for the gander. Do I have that right?
Oh, Nick, come on! You're old enough to hear that, right?
I'm not. Right? I don't know what's the cutoff. I'm 29. I'm 29. 30's right around the corner. I think it may be a 30 and above sort of thing.
Oh my gosh! I can't believe this. Well, yeah, I'm 37. 30. I can't believe you haven't heard.
I'm not trying to call you out for being old. You took it there. I was just saying I'd never heard the saying before.
Merriam-Webster, one person or situation should be treated the same way that another person or situation is treated. If he can go, you know, so that's it.
Okay.
You know, one situation you treat the same way as the other situation. So if I'm screaming out from the mountaintop that KU's defense was unlucky when teams were making 42% of the threes against Kansas, then I'm at least going to the same mountaintop when teams are making 23% or 24% of the threes against Kansas and saying, you know, this isn't probably going to hold either.
Okay, I don't want to beat a dead horse. We're talking to Jesse Newell, the Kansas City Star, but let's let's look at it instead as we're doing an autopsy, okay? We're trying to figure out how this sort of came to be, because I would push back on that in one regard, and that's that in that same sort of span, while it hasn't been as polar opposite as the months that preceded it, something else that's been pretty consistent, Jesse, is the interior defense. And you look at some of the numbers, this has been essentially all year long one of the best two-point defenses in the Big 12. But again, if I look at that time range since that Oklahoma State game where KU has won 6 of 7, they have been one of the country's best two-point defenses as well, which does seem a little bit more sustainable than looking at three-point shots.
Absolutely. Two-point defense. If you have your choice of having a good two-point defense or a good three-point defense, you take two-point defense every day of the week because it is more controllable. And if you look at Bill Self over time, this is why he's a successful coach, because what numbers has he controlled most on offense and on defense? Two-point shooting on offense, two-point shooting on defense. So absolutely. And that's why, you know, I was making the case in January saying, hey, look, you know, teams are making 42% of their threes against Kansas, but this two-point defense looks pretty good. And that's sort of in line with what other Bill Self teams have done and have controlled, keeping teams away from those easy baskets. And KU's done that really well lately. And you add that to, hey, you know, they've defensive rebounded pretty well. They haven't forced as many turnovers. And again, only 3 turnovers forced against Baylor is a little bit of a troubling sign. But for KU, that's sort of in line with what a typical Bill Self defense does. It makes it very difficult to shoot against. Sometimes you're forced into difficult shots at the end of the shot clock, which can be a 3. You get the defensive rebound. You know, recent teams for KU have kept teams off the free throw line. And then, you know, if the turnovers come, that's fine, but that's not the number one priority. The priority is to play sound position defense and make it difficult for teams to get two-pointers inside and at the rim. And so part of that, too, you have to give credit to KU's offense. I know this was a discussion we've had, Nick, but how many times did KU really start to lose games because of their offense would turn it over on a steal and it'd be a 3-on-1 the other way or a 2-on-0 the other way? So KU taking better care of the ball has resulted in other teams having to go 5-on-5 against Kansas, which has resulted in KU's defense playing up and has resulted in teams getting fewer easy baskets. So I absolutely agree with you in that regard. That is the positive for this Kansas team, which is they are starting to look like a typical Bill Self team, which is very difficult to score at the rim and to get easy points at the free throw line. It just means that KU still can be vulnerable from three. In a one-game sample especially, you know, could a January team pop up again and do that? Yes, that is possible. But, again, if you want something consistent game to game, you want good two-point defense, and that's why this team over time, over the last month, has really raised its level and gotten into a top 10 type discussion is because they've continued to do that on the interior defensively and then got a little bit better luck in three-pointers, and all of a sudden you're looking up and saying, hey, this defense is really good.
In continuing the trend of three-point discussion, flip side for KU's offense, they seemingly haven't been able to buy a bucket from deep as of late, and that's been something all season we've seen flashes, and that's about as far as I would take it. But we really haven't seen this team string together, you know, one, two, or two, three games consistently where they're knocking down shots. And at this point, is it reasonable to just sort of view that as something that you probably shouldn't expect to happen, but if it does, it's sort of just an added bonus?
No, so again, if you're looking for the glass half full for Kansas, I think that's a huge one. I mean, the threes have not fallen, and I think KU has good shooters, and they've gotten open looks. They've gotten good looks. They've been pass out threes, you know, Dave McCormick inside. And this is the sort of thing, you know, if I'm going to say, hey, one team could randomly hit threes against KU, what happens if KU randomly hits threes against an opponent? All of a sudden, you've got the stellar defense. You've got the great two-point defense. You've got a team that's rising at the right time playing for each other. And then you can add on maybe 8 or 9 points per game to what their typical total has been offensively lately. If that happens at the right time, then all of a sudden Kansas looks like a team that could make a run. If those moments fall in the right place and, you know, whatever that game is, the Sweet 16 game, the Elite Eight game against an opponent, maybe they're a 3 or 4 point underdog again. So that's why the bracket's going to matter. You know, I mean, I think for most teams out there, it's pretty obvious where you want to be. If you're in a bracket, you want to be not with Gonzaga, and you want to not be with Baylor if Baylor, you know, continues to ascend and get back to where it was in the pre-COVID days, because, you know, if KU finds itself in an Elite Eight game against Illinois and is a 4-point underdog and then for a one game sample shoots above its head from three, I would probably think Kansas is going to win that game. And that is encouraging because, again, we've seen Ochai Agbaji make shots. We've seen Christian Brown make shots. We've seen how confident they can be when they make their first one or they get hot early. And so that's sort of untapped potential on the offensive end. And you combine that with KU's been turning it over less lately. You know, they do pretty well on the offensive glass. So everything is in place that if those threes do fall, then, you know, KU has the looks of a good to great team on offense and then a great to elite team on defense. And that's definitely a team that's good enough to upset someone that's just a little bit better than them and potentially advance to, you know, an Elite Eight or a Final Four.
Yeah, that's tough to decipher who are the teams that are just a little bit better than Kansas. Like, I think at this point, I mean, Baylor, with what they're going through with COVID, I still view them in that elite tier. The only thing that's changed is, and I don't even care that Illinois beat them, I still do view Michigan sort of on that level with Baylor and Gonzaga, whatever the case may be. After that, when you're talking about teams like Houston and Iowa and Ohio State and Alabama and Florida State, it's tough for me to decipher whether or not those teams are better than Kansas, whether or not some of those teams may be worse than Kansas, or if it's just this big jumbled mess where KU probably has as good a chance as any of them at making some sort of run in March.
Yeah, and if you go back, I mean, if you Google this, that's sort of what I wrote about the three-point defense for Kansas. It was like the way that teams were shooting against Kansas and the way that they should have been shooting against Kansas, I was basically saying, it was in the headline. I said, here's 4 free points that KU's going to add per game by doing nothing different. You know, all they're going to do is just have teams shoot threes against them in a normal way instead of a crazy way, and KU's going to add 4 points. Well, the flip side of that is kind of true as well. Like, here's whatever, 4 to 6 free points that Kansas could gain just by hitting the three-pointers that we all think that they should hit with good shooters like Ochai Agbaji and Christian Brown in any particular game. And so I agree with you, Nick. I mean, you know, if it's the Elite Eight and Kansas Gonzaga, I mean, Kansas is probably a 9 or 10 point underdog. And so you need a lot of those. You need to shoot way over your head. You know what I mean? But if it's Kansas versus Illinois or Kansas versus Houston, you're probably looking at being, I don't know, a 4-point underdog, you know, 4.5, something like that. And again, one good shooting night, a couple guys making threes that I'm sure Bill Self feels like his team should be hitting at this point, and you go from a 4-point underdog to like, hey, this is like a 50-50 game. So that's the optimistic side for Kansas. I mean, if you can look at these season long numbers and you can, you know, they're mostly reliable and the team is what it is basically statistically. But I think all of us watching them kind of have seen the 3-point shooting on both ends and kind of feel like this team has kind of gone a little bit of a roller coaster way when it's come to either making shots or having other teams make shots. So that is the good view for Kansas, which is you don't have to be shooting great right now to shoot really well on the most important game in March. And so for Kansas, if you're going to be a 3-seed, 4-seed, 5-seed, whatever the case may be, and you get yourself in a position where you get a chance to maybe advance past your seed and you do have a good shooting game, that's all anybody's going to remember. And I think this Kansas team definitely has the potential to do that.
Jesse Newell, Kansas City star, with us here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. I just mentioned three teams, so in that vein, it's time for another edition of Kiss, Marry, Kill. Jesse, I will provide you with three teams, three college basketball teams. It is your job to decide which team to kiss, which team to marry, which team to kill, which team you love, which team you like, don't love, which team you're just not in on. This is a tough one. This is going to be the toughest challenge that I've given you to date, but I think you're up for it. Your three teams for today: Gonzaga, Baylor, and Michigan. Jesse, kiss, marry, kill, Gonzaga, Baylor, Michigan.
Oh, I mean, I have to marry Gonzaga. You know, especially since Baylor's fallen off. You know, like you've got to be in a long-term relationship with them. They're probably, you know, 3 or 4 point favorite against anybody that's in the field right now. So, marry Gonzaga. Man,
are you gonna do it?
I'm still kissing Baylor. I like Baylor's team. I really do. I'll go ahead and kill Michigan. Their fans can be kind of mean to me online.
Oh, so really?
They deserve to be killed. Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're grumpy. They even see what's frustrating is, you know, you would think like Big Ten schools, you know, good education. They have a lot of people that follow the analytics and know about it, and they kind of know what I do, but still yell at me. So yeah, I'll kill them off. That's fine. I'm happy to kiss Baylor. I still think that things could turn around in a hurry for them, and I love their team.
Okay, so you talk about this a lot, but for somebody who may not know your process, last night was an interesting one because Michigan loses a game handily. I mean, they lose 23 points to a really good Illinois team. Flip side of things, Baylor wins, albeit it wasn't the most convincing win against West Virginia. They had to duke it out in overtime. Had those games ended differently, let's say Michigan ends up beating a top five team in Illinois, and let's say Baylor loses in overtime to West Virginia for their second straight loss, would you still have answered the same way?
Most likely, because a lot of these advanced measures, the ones I use to determine best teams and the same ones that, you know, Vegas uses for its lines, they aren't too concerned about, hey, this thing went against this team and the 44th minute of the game, you know, bad call or a turnover. They're more worried about the long game, every possession. And, you know, you just mentioned it. The Baylor-West Virginia game was a great game and was going to come down the wire. And both teams sort of played as you would expect both teams to play. And so, yeah, I would probably say the same thing either way. And it's trickier, obviously, with Baylor coming off their pause to know exactly what they're going to be. But, for example, you just mentioned the head-to-head. I will have Michigan ahead of Illinois next week. Like, that doesn't change things, and the head-to-head can be very misleading in a one-game sample. It's sort of like rolling two dice, and you roll 9 one time, and so you figure that every single time you roll two dice, it's going to be 9. Well, we know sometimes it's going to be 5, sometimes it's going to be 2, sometimes it's going to be 4, but using head-to-head as an only determinant, it can get pretty misleading pretty quickly. So that's why you see, like, in the NBA Finals, if a team that's a 7-point underdog or 7-point favorite, if they lose the first game, the next game in Vegas, they're about a 6.5-point favorite. You know what I mean? Like, the line doesn't change that much. Sometimes crazy things happen in one game sample. So I still agree with you that Michigan is a really good team, deserves to be on top, and I'm not flipping them with Illinois based off of a one game fluky thing that sort of happened.
Despite the fact that you just killed them, like, let's not forget that mere moments ago you just killed Michigan, yet you are still giving them their credit. So Michigan fans don't know what to do with their fury right now.
I killed them because of their Twitter fan base. It's not fair, but somebody had to get killed, right?
That's right. That's the name of the game. That's Kiss, Marry, Kill, and he's Jesse Newell. Check out his work in the Kansas City Star, kansascity.com. Thank you, Jesse.
Thanks, Nick.
All right, it's 4 o'clock, and this is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Derek Johnson. I'm Nick Schwert. Let you hear from Bill Self coming up here in just a bit. But before we do that, it's time for another edition of the NFL Whip Around. Derek, take it away.
Yeehaw!
First up, if then. If free agency with a lower cap leads to a bunch of unexpected cuts. I saw somebody describe possibly in the next week or two, it could be like murderer's row, essentially, with cuts. Then that is blank for the Chiefs.
Wait a minute. I need more details. Murderer's row. What does that mean? All the best players are getting cut?
Not all the best players, but more than you'd assume. Because if the cap is lower than people expected, I mean, you gotta have money somewhere to pick up new additions.
But
to
I already
your
sort of
players.
Think that's gonna happen, don't you? Don't you think that Eric Fisher is getting cut? Don't you think?
I don't know. Brett Veach said that he thinks Eric Fisher is gonna be back in time for training camp.
But he's expensive. I get it. It's a premium position. So if there's one position you'd probably be willing to overspend a little bit on, it'd be him. Especially if you don't have a direct answer. But that's what happens when, if what we're talking about here, okay, well now things aren't going to play out the way we thought. So now it's time to sort of rethink. That's going to be the first guy you're going to look at. You're going to say, do we want him? Yes. In an ideal world, would he stay? Would we be willing to overpay for him? Yes. But what if we are now in a reality where you can't really afford to overpay for anybody? You know, trimming the fat, like that's the first thing you're going to look at. And it's not because I think Eric Fisher is fat. It's because his contract's a little bit bulky. Same thing for the guy on the other side of the line. Tackles are important positions, but where else are you going to go? Anthony Hitchens? Like, what? I mean, you're going to make me say it? Like, they're not cutting Frank Clark, right? They're not cutting Chris Jones, right?
No.
Say right.
Right?
Tell me I'm not crazy.
Maybe. Right? I think.
Come on. Come on. Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, they're not going anywhere?
No.
Mahomes? This is the easier way to do it. Process by elimination. If we can just acknowledge that Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill and Chris Jones and Frank Clark, they're all going to be on the team next year. That's a big chunk of talent, and it's also a big chunk of money.
Mm-hmm. Which means something's going to have to happen. I think most likely with Fisher, like, I could just see him restructuring his contract. Instead of making $13 million or whatever it is, it's just like, oh, okay.
Just charge $400 a ticket. Is that how the salary cap works?
No, not really. In baseball, it would, because it's unlimited. But no, not in the NFL. I think you're viewing this the wrong way, though. You're viewing it from the Chiefs' end of things. They'd have to cut everything. What about from the just entire market end of things? Because all these other teams are going to have to cut players who maybe are kind of your middle tier, older veteran player who are making too much money. They might be like, okay, well, since I just got cut, I'm going to go chase a ring. And where better to chase a ring if I'm going to go on a cheap one-year contract than Kansas City?
So this is basically that scenario that we do in sports talk radio all the time where we say, you know, if we were having a redraft of the whole league, right, if everybody was a free agent, who's going to be the... Is that what you're? Is this the dystopian NFL future that you are laying out in front of me? That basically everyone's going to be a free agent. And the Chiefs can have whoever they want. So which all pros do the Chiefs get now?
I think
two quarterbacks. Let's go get Russell Wilson, and you just have him line up outside on every play.
Could be a backward pass.
Or no,
play.
As you mentioned earlier, he just stands. He stands on the left hip of Mahomes, and who knows who's getting the ball snapped to who.
I would like it better if the second quarterback was a lefty, because then you could roll him whichever way. So get Tua.
Okay, perfect. It's not quite the star power we were going for, but it'd be cheaper. So, you know, if we're talking about cutting costs, then what better than a quarterback on a rookie deal?
So you didn't answer the question. Then that is blank for the Chiefs. I would say good.
I would say bad.
Oh.
Yeah.
Those are very opposite words.
We are on the opposite end of the spectrum from one another.
If Seattle trades Russell Wilson, then?
Then any quarterback is potentially available. Then there is no going back from this new era of the NFL where it is becoming more like the NBA and the freedom of movement is officially going to be here to stay. There were reports that came out late last week that even though they were sort of rumors at first, you know, Russell Wilson goes on the Dan Patrick show and asks about being traded. And he said, well, you know, I'm not sure Seattle would trade me, but if they did, blah, blah, blah. He talked about not wanting to get hit as much as he has and wanting that to get addressed. It was him speaking out more about the issues within the organization than he ever previously had. But even at that point, you still thought, okay, this is still Russell Wilson. Like, he's not going to ask to be traded. Like, he's happy in Seattle. He's highly paid, blah, blah, blah. Then the report comes out from The Athletic that, no, there's more bubbling underneath the surface, that there has been infighting and a power struggle, so to speak, between he and Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll, who, when the Seahawks hit a rocky stretch, sort of looked inward at Russell Wilson as the reason for that rocky stretch. And he wanted to get back to the idea of running the ball, not turning it over, winning with your defense, as opposed to hashtag let Russ cook. When there's a power struggle between a head coach and a quarterback, I am here to report that ultimately somebody will probably have to go. We saw it with Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy. Most teams are going to choose the quarterback over the head coach. Most teams should choose the quarterback over the head coach. When there was a power struggle between Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, what happened? The quarterback left. Something's got to give here. If I were in charge in Seattle, I would say, Pete Carroll, appreciate it. Time to go. He's the second oldest coach in the NFL. So somebody would hire him. But it's not as though you have to look at it and say, well, we're never going to recover from this. Like Joe Exotic, I'm never going to financially recover from this. That's not what Seattle would be saying, but that's what you would be saying if you traded your franchise quarterback. If you deal Russell Wilson, anybody is gettable. There is not one quarterback in the league that you would say he is going to be there for the rest of his career. And honestly, what would you think about Patrick Mahomes? Not in the short term, but long term, big picture. What would you think about the entirety of his career if Russell Wilson got traded from Seattle? You would look at it and say,
yeah, I'd be worried.
Are you sure he's going to finish his career
right
in Kansas City?
I mean, everybody thought when LeBron James was in year five, year six, winning MVPs with the Cavaliers, he was going to be a lifer there. He was from there. Sometimes things just kind of come about to lead to a split. And that's got to be a little scary to the idea that we always talk about this. Well, I mean, if you could take, you know, two more Super Bowl trips with Patrick Mahomes, who knows if he'll even be here for another 15 years? It could be another 5 years.
Yeah,
it could be 10.
I don't see it happening with Andy Reid because he, unlike Pete Carroll, like Pete Carroll's football philosophy, the basic tenet of what he believes is successful football, runs counter to what Russell Wilson does well. That's not the case with Andy Reid. Andy Reid wants to throw the ball, dynamic passing game. He's got a dynamic passer. So those two are a better fit than I think Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson, but Andy Reid's not going to coach in Kansas City forever.
Next segment, are they good? Are the Cardinals good now that they just gave J.J. Watt the bag?
They didn't give him the bag.
You got $23 million guaranteed as a 31-year-old or something.
But he's good.
Yeah, good-ish.
He's a top 10 pass rusher in the NFL.
Maybe.
Is.
Maybe.
Definitively.
5.5 sacks.
Injured. Bad team. Get some help. Now he's got some. Chandler Jones. They're going to play opposite one another? Is Chandler Jones a...
No, they're going to actually stack on top of each other.
Piggyback?
Yeah.
Like leapfrog? That's a innovation. We'll talk about that later. No, it doesn't really move the needle for me. Like, they got marginally better, but I don't know if there's any defensive end. Maybe save Khalil Mack, who I would say you get him on your team and it completely changes the outlook of your defense. J.J. Watt's not that guy anymore. J.J. Watt from 5 years ago, sure. J.J. Watt now, he's just a nice addition. He doesn't change my outlook for the Arizona Cardinals as a team.
Yeah, agreed. And I don't know. Like, part of me says that if you would have signed with the Chiefs, like, you would have heard a lot of local people talking about how big of a signing this is. So maybe this is a little hypocritical because he doesn't choose the Chiefs, which I don't think it was ever really in play if he was getting that much money. But you're right. I mean, the Cardinals are not that close to me to being a Super Bowl contender. I mean, after they had the Hail Mary, it just went downhill. And you look at the history of Cliff Kingsbury, whether it's been at Texas Tech, whether it's been at Arizona, he's kind of had these back half collapses in the seasons. Now, I don't know how much you want to correlate those two together, but it has happened and it happened again with the Cardinals. I don't think he is a good enough coach for them to ever win a playoff.
Well, how have you turned this into a Cliff? you would be the guy. You haven't believed in Cliff Kingsbury from day one, even though they showed a ton of growth from year one to year two. You're still trying to manipulate this conversation into pooing on Cliff Kingsbury and his ability as a head coach.
Yes.
You've got a dynamic young quarterback. You've got a top two wide receiver in the NFL. And you've got a defense with some pieces.
No.
Some pieces. See, that's a way to kind of not say that they suck on defense. Isaiah Simmons. Been bad rookie year, but still young. Potential. Cardinals. Russell Wilson's gone. Cardinals may just wind up winning the NFC West next year. Book it.
No. Jets general manager Joe Douglas made some comments about potentially trading Sam Darnold. Is that good?
Is the fact that he made comments about trading Sam Darnold, is that good? That's what you're asking me?
Yes.
I feel like that's a bit of a stretch for this bit.
It is the offseason. We don't even have free agency for 2 weeks. What do you want me to do? We haven't had football in like a month
fair
and
enough,
a half.
Fair enough. Going with what you got. Joe Douglas said earlier today, quote, "Our stance on Sam hasn't changed. He's an extremely talented player, and he's very smart. Very tough." I love that. When reporters ask a GM or a coach about a player, they just start to deflect. He's such a good guy. He's good. He's smart, and he plays hard.
You're talking to your dog.
He's a
good
trier.
Boy.
He's a good boy. We have no doubt that Sam is going to achieve his outstanding potential. It just may not be with us. Okay, he didn't say that last part. Obviously, we're in the process of gaining as much information as we can leading up through free agency and the draft, but our stance on Sam has not changed. I will answer the call if it's made. As it pertains to Sam, like I said, Sam, we think, is a dynamic. I like to imagine, without having heard the audio, that his voice is getting higher and higher. Like I said, Sam, we think, is a dynamic player in this league with unbelievable talent who really has a chance to really hit his potential moving forward. But like I said, if calls are made, I will answer them. As opposed to a GM just, what, not doing his job, and you see the Bills on line two and you pick it up and immediately hang up. Don't call this number again. Of course you're going to – it's literally your job. Sam Darnold is going to get traded, right? Are we in agreement here?
Yes. And I know that, like, Todd McShay has the Jets taking a quarterback at number two in the draft, and other mock drafts do too. But the reason I bring up Todd McShay, I believe he was a teammate in college on his football team with Joe Douglas. I don't know if they're friends or anything, but you would think maybe he has a little bit more insight there, given that knowledge. I don't know. So, ipso facto, Todd McShay knows, Sam Darnold getting traded, they're going to draft Zach Wilson.
You've got the number two overall pick. Basically, your options are, if you're staying at two, you're probably taking Sewell, the tackle from Oregon. You still have huge offensive line issues. That was the biggest thing addressed last year. If you're going to stick with Sam Darnold, you're either going to go draft a wide receiver, draft Jamar Chase or Devontae Smith, which I don't think you do at number two, or you take another tackle to protect your quarterback. If you trade, yeah. Or if you trade Sam Darnold, I should say, you're probably going to take Zach Wilson second overall.
Speaking of Zach Wilson, time for better than Kirk Cousins. Zach Wilson, as a rookie, is he going to be better than Kirk Cousins?
Not if he goes to New York, but there is growing buzz around Zach Wilson. This pre-draft process.
I love that term.
Growing buzz. It is a fun term. Or you just like what it implies? Just like a throwaway line?
A little bit.
Would you not agree that leading in this pre-draft process in this offseason that his name has not been circulating more than Trevor Lawrence? And maybe that's simply because we treat Trevor Lawrence to Jacksonville as a foregone conclusion, which it is. But you see more and more of these draft gurus, these mock draft guys who are saying, you know, no, I have Zach Wilson number one. Or at least saying the gap between Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson is not as big as people would make it out to be. Regardless, like, Zach Wilson's been the popular name. He's been the sexy name that's thrown around for months. And now, it's silly to bring him up next to Trevor Lawrence, but people seem to like him. Now, if he goes to the Jets, that's no man's land, so I would say no, not better in year one. But you look at the other potential options. Miami, probably not going there. Atlanta, could see it happening. Philadelphia at 6, absolutely could see it happening. Detroit at 7, could see it. Carolina at 8, any of those teams. He goes there, I think he is immediately better than Kirk Cousins. Not because I watched a ton of Zach Wilson. I watched some of Zach Wilson this year. Simply because the buzz. The buzz is palpable. And where there's buzz, there is confidence, blind confidence from yours truly.
I'm trying to think, like, of just rookie quarterback seasons. How many of them end up, just that specific season, as an above-average quarterback? That year, like, above-average is the wrong term. A top half of the league quarterback.
Justin Herbert this year.
Okay. So what, one of...
Okay, that's 1 year.
One of three?
I only need one per year, though.
No, but this is my point. I feel like it is definitely less than 50%. And I would think Trevor Lawrence is going to be above that mark. Odds would just tell me that Zach Wilson's below kind of the middle average quarterback. I like Zach Wilson. I think he'll be good. But year one, up to Kirk Cousins, I'm not quite sure.
You are Joe Douglas. Your voice got higher, and then you said it like that. I like him. No, we think he'll be good. We think he'll be good someday. You don't like Zach Wilson. Mm. Just say it. You think he's a bum.
He's a turd.
You think
wasn't
that,
even a captain on
you
his
think
team.
That this
no,
buzz
I actually do like Zach Wilson.
Is unwarranted.
Next up, the guy that he might be replacing, Sam Darnold. Is he better than Kirk Cousins? Will he be better this next year?
Next year?
Yeah.
Where are his potential trade destinations?
Let's see.
What are you hearing?
What am I hearing?
I've heard the Carolina.
Bears, Carolina, the Saints, maybe? Question mark. Seattle, if they trade away Russell Wilson, would they want to bring in Sam Darnold? USC guy with Pete Carroll? Even though those ties have been long severed.
The Colts was a popular pick early. Mm-hmm. They ended up with Carson Wentz. That's probably advantageous for them. New Orleans is an interesting one. If he goes to New Orleans, he's definitely in a better situation with a head coach who I would trust to bring the best out of him. Detroit, getting to a little quarterback competition. What's Washington going to do at quarterback? They don't have an answer. Mm-mm. That's a better situation than what he's in. Any situation would be better than New York, right? We acknowledge that. I still believe that Sam Darnold can be good. Now, let's get back to the question, though. Will he ever be better than Kirk Cousins? Not next year. I believe he can be better, just not better than Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, I agree that Sam Darnold can be better. I think the ceiling, though, is like a worse version of what we saw from Baker Mayfield last year. And what we saw from Baker Mayfield last year was basically Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
Ipso facto, no. Not better than Kirk Cousins. Last one. Kyler Murray.
I think Kyler Murray is better than Kirk Cousins. Mm. Already.
Mm. Fraud!
He's more interesting.
Kyler's a fraud.
He's not as good of a passer as Kirk Cousins, but I love with some of these conversations, we tend to sort of dismiss the ability to run the ball and say, okay, well, he turns the ball over, 26 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. Okay, yeah, he also ran for 800 yards and 11 touchdowns last year. Like, those scores count. He accounted for 37 touchdowns. He did fumble the ball a lot, didn't he? How many fumbles did he have last year?
A billion.
Nine. So that's quite a bit from a quarterback. Yes, I will say Kyler Murray better than Kirk Cousins.
Kirk Cousins is better. That's all I have to say. Over 4,000 passing yards. Kyler Murray, not a good passer. 35 touchdowns for Kirk Cousins. Did you realize he threw 35 touchdowns last year? I did not. Kirk Cousins is better.
I guess that makes sense. Justin Jefferson kind of went off his rookie year, huh?
All right, who's older? First up, Dallas kicker Greg Zuerlein or Cincinnati assistant special teams coach Colt Anderson?
Greg the Leg. Been around for a while. He's probably 34. I'll say the Colt assistant is older.
He's 35. Greg the Leg's 33. Former Vikings tight end was just cut, Kyle Rudolph, or former Jets defensive lineman also just cut, Henry Anderson.
Rudolph's been around for a while. I'll say he's older.
Rudolph is 31. Henry Anderson is 29.
I would have guessed he was older than that.
Las Vegas quarterback Marcus Mariota or Miami linebacker, who was also just cut, Kyle Van Noy.
I should know how old Van Noy is. It was surprising. He just signed a big deal with them, like a 4-year big deal. So, I will say Van Noy is older.
3-0, Van Noy 29, Mariota 27. NFL analyst Brian Baldinger or Baltimore senior defensive assistant Paul Gunther.
I love watching Brian Baldinger's videos. He's like very enthusiastic.
Baldy's breakdowns.
Baldy's breakdowns. Very enthusiastic about the NFL. Mm-hmm. And whatever play he's breaking down. But he's an elder statesman. Mm-hmm. I would say 50s.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the other guy.
Paul Gunther?
Yeah. I'll say Baldy's older.
Wow.
Okay, let's go.
Paul Gunther's 49, Baldinger's 62.
All right, 5-0, 5-0. Let's go.
Chargers head coach Brandon Staley or Minnesota wide receivers coach Keenan McCardell.
Oh, Brandon Staley's young.
Mm-hmm.
He was the wide receivers coach.
Brandon Staley? No, he's the defensive coordinator.
Right, exactly. That's what I was getting
for
at.
For the Rams.
And then McCardell played for the Bucs. Mm-hmm. They won that Super Bowl in... Can you give me that? What year did the Bucs win?
02?
He would have been probably mid-30s then. That was a while ago. Mm. Oh, Brian. Oh, Keenan McCardell, sneaky old. I'm going to go with him.
Keenan McCardell, 51.
Let's
Brandon
go!
Staley, 38.
5-0.
Yeah, good week for you. All right, let's bring you back down to earth. Where are they at? Marquise Goodwin was on the 49ers and the Bills. Didn't play this last year. Sat out. He actually just interacted with Patrick Mahomes on Twitter today.
Okay.
So maybe going to go to the Chiefs, but where he at right now?
But wait, you said he's not in football.
Well, no, he just sat out last year because of COVID, like Damian Williams did.
Oh, but he's still on a team.
Yeah.
Marquise Goodwin in New Orleans.
Is that your final answer?
Final answer.
Philadelphia.
Huh.
They traded a pick for him in the draft, and then he didn't play.
COVID, man. Serious. Yeah. Got to watch out for that. That's your NFL whip around. Let's hear from Bill Self coming up next. This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Yeehaw! All right, Bryce Thompson spoke to the media earlier today. We'll let you hear from him coming up here in a bit. Bryce has been a godsend since he came back before that Iowa State game, or the first Iowa State game, which he was really good playing consistent minutes. He brings a ton of intensity defensively. He's a scoring threat on offense. He's a finisher in transition. He is not the most important player. He's not going to be the reason why KU wins the title, but he has clearly, I believe, sort of widened their margin for error since his return. And I'm excited to see what this guy can do because he is that ultimate competitor. Yesterday, Matt Tate said that he's got that Mamba mentality on the court, which is, I think, what KU needs. I think KU has a lot of nice guys on this team. And not to say Bryce isn't. He's a very fun person to talk to and to listen to, but when it's game time, like, he's got that aggression on the court, which I think is something that KU needs. He spoke to the media earlier today. Here he is.
Bryce, are you 100% recovered from your injury?
Yes, sir, just about. I'd say around 90s, 97, somewhere in there. So, yeah, I'm good.
Did it ever bother your shot?
Early, it was a little difficult. I had to do a little extra, like on my wrist motion to get the full extension, but now it's pretty smooth.
Hey, Bryce, I know you're a big Kobe fan and that's been well documented. And now that we've had a chance to see you play, there's a little bit of that in your game. Does that come natural? I mean, the mannerisms and the things you do, is that just you being you, or did you purposely try to pick those things up from what he did and how he played and try to carry those into your game?
I think it's just because of, I watch a lot of film on Kobe. So I think, you know, the more I watch, the more I naturally just end up doing those things on the court. So I think that's just kind of where it stems from.
Do you catch yourself doing it? Are you even aware when you do those things?
Yeah. Sometimes I will. And Coach Howard will always remind me, be like, this dude look like Kobe right here. Just like the way I'm standing or bending over, or like I got my jersey in my mouth, or just some little stuff like that.
Yeah, it really seems to have shown up in the last month or so. I mean, does it correlate to you being more comfortable and more confident at this level and your role?
Definitely. I got to keep gaining confidence as I play and just keep doing me, and, you know, we'll be good.
how do you feel? I mean, do you feel comfortable how your role is defined and what you can do for this team?
Yes, I'm extremely comfortable. You know, I'm excited. I think we got a great group, and I think we can do some magical things in March.
In your opinion, what is the role of the reserve players?
Usually to come in, provide a spark, to try to uplift us and, just give us a little boost. I think that's pretty much it.
Hey, Bryce, as you kind of, as the regular season comes to an end, you guys get ready for the postseason. For your first season here at Kansas, could you, going through all the COVID-19 protocols and, to get to this point, to make it almost the Big 12 tournament, can you just kind of reflect on what it's been like as a freshman and having to basically change your lifestyle? As a college freshman myself, it's obviously been a little different, but.
Yeah, definitely. It's been extremely difficult. It's different. Just stuff that I'm not used to, testing every other day, wearing your mask everywhere. I can't sit next to my teammates all the way in the locker room. Just a lot of different stuff that COVID has impacted. It's been really different. But, we've been able to adjust well, and I think we've been doing a great job with it.
What do you see as kind of your role in maybe taking some of the pressure off of Marcus?
Definitely. He's our main guy. He gets tired. So, I got to be able to come in, handle the ball, get us in the offense, and, just hold it down, basically.
Bryce, as one of the two freshmen that are in rotation, you and DeJuan, how does that dynamic duo happen? Is it natural for you guys to play well together, or how did that happen?
Yeah, I think it's just natural. We're both, both pretty good players. I think we just bounce off of each other. We get in, we bring energy, and we just kind of do what we do. And I think I really do enjoy playing with them.
Hey, Bryce, earlier this week, Marcus talked about a moment when you guys were struggling and you guys came together and had sort of a team meeting where you talked about doing what coach told you to do. I just wondered what you remembered about that particular day.
I just remember it was very good. We've definitely learned from, as you can see, we're playing a lot better now, but it was a time where we were struggling a little bit, and we just had to come together like men and talk about it and address it. And I think we did that, and we're seeing the benefits of it now.
I wonder too, Coach has talked about your guys' changing up the ball screen defenses. For a guard who is having to either stop the roller or play the backside of it, how comfortable are you guys with that now and that change that you made?
It was a little tough early, but I mean, in practice we're repping it over and over. So now it's pretty easy. Now I'm kind of used to it, and I'm just able just to read and react quickly. So,
Bryce, you guys are obviously hot, hitting your stride at the right time. Is there something you still want to learn about this team? Maybe a question or two that you think you guys still need to answer before you get to the postseason?
I'm not sure. I think being able to, just to get out to great starts every game, because as we continue to go, we're going to be playing great teams, and it's going to be tough if we're behind and playing behind the whole game. So I think just continuing to be able to get out to great starts and be able to carry that momentum throughout the game.
I also want to ask you, has anybody on this team talked to you about, what you do bring to this group? I mean, your minutes are modest, right? Your points are modest, but the record with you in the lineup is much better than with you out. So has anybody said, hey, we need you. We like having you. I mean, have your teammates or anybody talked to you about that kind of action?
Yeah, mostly just everybody, just letting me know that, that I mean something, that I bring something to the table, and that, we're better with me in the lineup, like you said.
Bryce, with the Big 12 tournament coming up next week, how does it feel to be about to play your first Big 12? And, of course, March is around the corner. Are you excited to be a part of March Madness?
Yes, ma'am. I'm extremely excited. I've been working really hard. We've been working really hard for this moment, and we're just ready just to take it on and just see what we can do.
Bryce, what have you seen from – oh, sorry. I was one question. Bryce, what have you seen from UTEP?
I've only seen a little bit. Today in practice we'll go over their plays and – all that stuff, and then we'll have film later tonight, so I'll get a better grasp of them tonight, and I'll be able to watch some extra film of my own to get ready for tomorrow.
All right, that is KU freshman Bryce Thompson speaking to the media. He's Derek Johnson. I'm Nick Schwert. This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk.